Can we take a moment and bring our higher power back into the rooms? Now Chris will do a reading.
Thanks, Mike. I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good, but not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. So we became subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm. The chilling vapor of his loneliness settled down. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily, we did, but then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen: terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Unhappy readers who read this page will understand.
Thank you. Looks like the person I was going to introduce you got kicked off. You want to introduce her, Nikki?
Sure, it would be my pleasure. Hi, I'm Nikki. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 6, 2014. Alex, she has been one of my friends for a while now as we've been on this journey. And anytime that she calls me or I call her or there is some turbulence that happens, seeking a solution with her is always where the conversation ends. And she has this language of the heart that just feeds my soul. So whenever Mike asked me if I had anybody that would be interested in sharing in here today, I just, you know, her name just popped right in my mind. And the first thing she did when I asked her is, okay, I'm going to get my book out and start studying these pages. Me and God got this. So Alex, I love you. You got here right when you were supposed to get here, and you're going to do an amazing job. Namaste, my friend. Namaste. Here's Alex.
You're unmuted.
Okay. Hi guys. I'm Alex. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. So, I pray, but I'm going to pray again because I am nervous. No matter how many times I've shared, I'm just nervous. So I'm going to take a moment of silence to invite my higher power in to make sure I speak of a clear message today. Okay. So again, I'm Alex, I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say thank you to the committee for asking me to speak, and Nikki definitely for asking me to speak. You know, it's so funny because I literally just switched fellowships, and I've been praying for, you know, just to help the still suffering. And I was like, oh, I'll just get one person, you know, and that's whom my higher power is going to put on my path. And Nikki's like, hey, do you want to speak? So instead of like one, I get a Zoom meeting and I'm like, God, you're funny. But anyway, so I was told to kind of share my story and incorporate how the four horsemen kind of play tight into that. So that's what I'm going to do today. And hopefully there is a message of recovery in here. So when I decided to read this, The Four Horsemen, you know, it talks about terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. You know, and before we even get there, in the beginning of this, it talks about how drinking means conviviality. And I'm like, what does that even mean? You know, so if I don't know something today, I've been taught to look a word up so that I have my own understanding. And what that word means is means friendly, lively. And that's what drinking meant to normal people. However, for us, you know, it says that the last days of drinking were heavy. The old pleasures were gone. And for me, you know, when I got here, I did not think drinking or using drugs, it wasn't fun anymore. I was really desperate when I got here for something different. In order to do that, I had to do something completely different that I had never done before. And when I got here, you know, I didn't have my kids. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a job. I was jobless, homeless, and penniless. So there was a lot of footwork that needed to go into that. And I'm really grateful for the surrender that I found and for the rock bottom that I hit. And I can remember, you know, I guess just like starting at the beginning, as a kid, I was really angry and really distraught. So in order to deal with those feelings, I used, and I carried that on through the rest of my drinking, using career. Eventually, my drinking and my drugging got completely out of control. I can remember being in rehab at a young age. I was introduced to the rooms at a young age as well. So I was just completely unmanageable in high school. My mom had no idea what to do with me. I kept getting arrested. I mean, I was putting my mom in debt just from all the things that I had stolen, just complete unmanageability. And I didn't know how to stop or stay stopped for that matter. I got sent off to treatment, and in there I got introduced to the rooms. And I can remember being so angry when I finally came into it. Because, you know, it talks about how we need to concede to our innermost selves. And I can remember coming to a point where I was like, wow, I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to have to do what you guys had to do in order to, like, have a good life. I just wanted to keep doing it my way. And it talks about that, too, in the book, about self-propulsion and, you know, trying to basically run the show. And I don't run the show today. You know, so, I was scared to try to do something different because I didn't know what that was going to look like. And it kind of talks about that further through here as well. You know, on 152, I do believe. Yeah. Basically, I'm pretty sure in there it talks about that, how we think that we're going to be boring and stupid and glum, you know, but actually what comes about this is camaraderie, you know, and the fellowship and getting with the sponsor, working steps, applying the principles in all areas of into your life, not just some, but all the principles that you learn in this program. So anyway, with me being, out of treatment, I was scared, which kind of coincides with like terror. I was really confused as to how this thing was going to work for me, because just because it works for you doesn't mean it's going to work for me. That's how I thought, though. However, I did give it a try at some point after I had gone to, I think it was like my second meeting, because at my first meeting, I looked around the room. I heard some things. I didn't find any identification. So I basically just focused on the differences rather than the similarities and decided to walk out of the rooms only to find more misery for the next few years later on down the road, which brought me back to rehab, back to the rooms. And I was just baffled by how I even got to where I was after being in treatment. But it was probably because I just kept trying to do things my way, you know? So after I had gotten out of treatment, I decided to give the program a try again. And I did work with a sponsor and I did work some steps. However, again, self-will came to play a part. And I went back out and I used again. By this time, I'm kind of like all over the place. Sorry. So just bear with me. After about my second treatment, I had my first baby. I had a boy. And I thought, oh, this baby will save me. And the family will save me. And I will never drink again because everything is going to save me with this baby and this family. And that's just not how, for me, that's just not really what worked. A baby can't save me. Another individual can't save me. Only a higher power. And Alex working the program can save my soul and my spirit. So I got out, I had a son, and unfortunately I used again. I mean, there was just nothing that could stop me. I didn't know how, you know. I mean, I had a small understanding, but I wasn't willing. And, you know, that's huge and extremely vital, especially in the first step. You know, we talk about the principles of, you know, acceptance, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. I mean, you can be open-minded all you want, but if you're not willing, open-mindedness without willingness will not work. You know, all the principles, you know, kind of go hand in hand. So I kept using, and eventually I left my son's father, whom I was with, and I decided to jump into another one because I thought this person would save me too. So I obviously didn't learn my lesson, and I kept using, and I used more frequently, and I used harder drugs, and it kind of talks about that too in the big book, you know, because I thought, oh, you know, with me having using drugs, I didn't know how I'd be able to identify as an alcoholic, but really to identify with an alcoholic is to know how to use to despair and to dereliction. And for me, I wasn't even able to look at my own self in the mirror when I got here. And like, I'm so grateful today that I can. Whew. So kept using, kept having more unmanageability, and eventually I thought I was just like a god or something. I thought that I could use without my life being like totally just, it's not the way it looks for you. It was still unmanageable, but not to the point of where I'd seen others go. So, and it doesn't need to be that way either. Like to the newcomer, like your bottom does not have to look a certain way. You know, these are all about like how we feel and getting into the steps and looking at how the disease plays tricks on our minds and how obsession plays part with compulsing and how we combat that by working the steps with a sponsor who has a sponsor who's working steps, who's working steps. For me, I wanted my foundation to be strong. So anywho, eventually my life got to the point where my children were taken by DCFS. And I was just completely, I had no idea what to do. So I went back to treatment again and to the psych ward again, because that was part of my story too, you know. And after I got out of that stint and the kids were still taken, they wanted me to do a service plan. And the plan was so simple, you know, stay clean and sober, find a sponsor, make sure you have a job. And I kept using, and again, I had no idea how to really combat my disease because I kept trying to do it my way, which probably played part in all the bewilderment and the frustration that I felt. So, and I believe it kind of talks about that too, you know, where it says, there was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. And that's kind of like how it was to me. I even have like a little note here, like step one, because it talks about like obsession, you know? And so eventually my life got to a point where the second father that I was with, because I also had another son. I did not mention that earlier, so you might be a little confused as to why I said kids and not child. But with that second individual that I met, we also had a baby. And so both the kids were taken. And I used to complete demoralization with this second individual. And it eventually got to a point where heavy sedatives were a huge part of my life. And I thought that if I just do this, like this person will love me more because I couldn't even love my own self. So with this individual and the kids being gone, I thought, okay, well, it had been a week since we had been awake and we finally went to sleep. So when I woke up that morning, I figured it'd be a good idea to leave the home to try to get clean and sober. And so I decided to leave the home And this person, I mean, it was a very toxic relationship. There was a lot of abuse, a lot of drug use, a lot of drinking. And when I left, of course, it was nothing but argument. And the next day really forever changed my life. You know, I left and I had a visit with my son the next day. So I went back to the house. And what I came back to find was my boyfriend at the time on the floor overdosed. And so I haven't talked about this in a while. So you would think that would stop me, but it did not. And I was just completely in despair. Although that didn't stop me, I continued to use as I did. Eventually, I got to the last day where I used, and that was December 1st of 2016, although I can't claim my sobriety date as December 2nd, 2016. And I can remember leaving my house. This is how crazy I was. I remember having my very first visit with DCFS and having my very first overnight and getting high and drinking and leaving my house twice while my children were in the home, leaving to continue that insanity. So when I got here, I had a sponsor and she said, "Are you done? Are you done? Are you ready to work the steps?" I said, "Yeah, I'm ready." So, you know, when I got to step one, I learned about the principles. You know, I learned about acceptance. Like I had spoke before, acceptance, honesty, humility. Humility was a huge thing for me because I had been in and out of the rooms for 9 years. And the more open-minded I am, the more I am able to remain teachable. I am the student first, always. I am not God. I do not know everything. You know, I learned about surrender and that my surrender a lot of the times was in fetal position, crying my eyes out because I didn't know how to live. And thank God for the women in the fellowship who had been through this. You know, those of us who have faced our limit and found a way out, that's exactly what I found when I was ready. So I moved on to step two once my sponsor was like, "I think you have an understanding of one." And I got to step two and I learned about faith and I learned about trust. And continued open-mindedness and willingness, you know. And step three, you know, I really learned about how to fully trust and fully surrender that from this point forward, I'm going to continue working the steps. And so that's what I did. And then I got to four and I took my inventory and I saw a lot of things that not only people did to me, because it wasn't always about what they did to me. You know, I got to see how I played a part in everything that I did. And I still hold myself accountable with that today, too. Step five is just sharing that with another human and with your higher power. Well, at least that's been my experience. Step six and seven, those are great. You know, everyone talks about how scary the fourth step is. No, step six and seven, the steps are always daily maintenance, but six and seven were really hard for me the first time because I, you know, it talks about in the big book how we need to quit playing God because Alex kept thinking she was God and could change herself when I needed to humble myself and allow a loving higher power to help remove some of these deep rooted character defects. Because, you know, at some point in my recovery, I did get into another relationship. I am still with this individual today, although at some point we had to take time away because I was so toxic and I kept trying to control things, not allowing me to humbly ask my higher power to remove the defects. And I'm really grateful for that too, because I almost reached a point in my recovery where I used and I had some time, not a lot of time, but I had a little bit of an understanding. And I was working at a treatment center. I had sponsees. I had, you know, this beautiful life on the outside, yet I was dying on the inside. So I'm grateful for that small little space that I had there because it reminded me why I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and how vital and essential the program is and how I have to be willing to work the program, not my program. So after 6 and 7, because that was kind of a shit show, you know, I got to 8. I made my list. I got to 9. I made my amends. Step 10. Thank God for step 10, you know, where I can take a daily inventory and I can look at if I am applying, you know, the steps and the principles in my life. Like, how did I pack into the stream of life today? Am I, you know, practicing a step 12 continuously on a daily basis, reaching out to the newcomer? You know, and 11 is probably my favorite step, building on that relationship with a higher power. And, you know, what's so cool is with me switching fellowships, you know, I kind of did it to grow more spiritually. And I do understand recovery is recovery, but, you know, I've really been digging into faith and finding out how if I skim over step 2, the rest of the steps are very difficult to work, which has been my experience. And so with continuously applying, you know, all the steps into my life, things get better and life has gotten better. I'm not so spiritually bankrupt as I was when I first decided to ask my sponsor to sponsor me. And, you know, she's got me reading out of the big book with pages like 60 through 63 and 86 through 88. And at first I'm like, why do I have to keep reading this? But the more I keep reading it, the more I keep seeing myself. And that's the whole point, because I won't always see me coming. That's the whole point of having a network, you know, to be my eyes when I can't, to be my ears when I don't hear. And I'm just so grateful for that. I really don't think I have anything else to share besides what I just did. I don't think I took up too much time, so sorry if I didn't speak for the whole hour I was supposed to. But that's how I feel the Four Horsemen play a part in my life, how they have, how they could still be if I don't work, you know, daily maintenance on my program and building with my higher power. I think it's so important to find a higher power to help continue to carry you. Cause for me, you know, I could have women and I could have a sponsor and, you know, I could read. However, I have to come into my own understanding of how to apply that and to continue working with the God of my understanding. So anyways, thank you for asking me to share, and I'm done. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's everybody say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alex.
Thanks, Alex.
Thank you for sharing.